Swine flu free. It is the Nancy Skinner Show on a Monday. After a crazy weekend. Happy to be back at the microphone. Feeling good? How you feeling? Creed, you okay? No discernible signs of swine flu? Can't hear you, Creed. You got it. There's a little button there. It's called like a microphone.
How about that?
There you go.
I'm swine flu free.
You are? You don't sound well, though. I must say, I know you told everybody we had a best of on Friday. I am back, and I have a lot of trouble for you today, I'll tell you that. There's a lot going on. Caused trouble over the weekend, and you need to listen to this program because you're gonna get caught up in whatever nonsense. Honestly, I'm gonna do a little patting on the back here. But nonsense, I called this about the swine flu hysteria, did I not, last week? I actually think I said, which is unusual for me because I'm such a, you know, what am I, polished person. I think I said it was a bunch of crap. and indeed, I was correct in that official assessment about the swine flu before we get into the real juicy stuff. The number to the program is 1-888-64-NANCY. That's 1-888-646-2629. So, yeah. I did. Remember, my trip got canceled, and everybody was freaking out, wall-to-wall, swine flu coverage. I remember I couldn't believe every day it was another thing. The latest on the killer flu. Then they started calling it the killer flu, and it went from the swine flu to the H1N1 flu or N1H1 or whatever, because the panic has spread to the pork industry, affecting the U.S. pork industry. As people are quarantined in hotels in China and Hong Kong, and I mean, it's just absolutely. I saw last night. I don't know if folks, because we're gonna get into stuff, but I just want to know. I saw on the local news last night here in Detroit, dozens of school closings. They had, you know, like a big storm across the ticker. Dozens and dozens of schools have closed down. We've had two reported cases of swine flu in Michigan, and I don't even know if they're actual or suspected cases, to tell you the truth. And so they're closing down schools across Michigan.
I'm proud of my district, by the way, for that.
Were you in that group?
Now, that's where I went to high school.
Well, there's tons. I mean, lots of schools are closing down. So I want to know one, and put this out there just because it's curious. I don't want to be thrown off my track because I'm loaded, locked and loaded to bear my honey bunny and I got a fight, okay, over the weekend, and I'm going to share it with you. But in any case, is this happening all over the country? Are they closing schools all over the country? Or is it just this? Because I'm thinking about the economic repercussions, as I tend to do here on the show. Think about, you know, like what matters. If you've noticed, there's always a priority system here. Try not get off on too many jags unless they're important. But so the school shut down. People are trying to work, right? So they got kids now all of a sudden. They got to take off work. We're already in a recession. Productivity falls. I mean, businesses are hanging on. Your kids are all of a sudden home for endless days. These schools are being shut down. It's set on the ticker till May 13th in Michigan. Is that happening in California and other places? Are they shutting down schools en masse for 2 weeks or a week or so as a prophylactic measure? I'm just curious. 1-888-64-NANCY if they are. Because to me, it's I'm watching, and even the news. And I said this last week. I said, this is out of proportion. This is a flu, okay? Get out the snot meters. That's really what it's about. You're not going to feel well for a couple of days, but it's not the deadly. We're not talking Ebola or flesh-eating bacteria, okay? We are talking about the flu. Now, Mexico. First of all, in the United States, they have 245 cases in 35 states. Mexico has lowered their flu alert level, And everything's back open. Cafes, museums, and libraries are reopening this week. They are saying that it's in decline and under control. So the epicenter of this whole thing, they're fine and reopening, and seems to they've got it completely under control. Meanwhile, and world health officials now are saying that they have no plans to raise the alert level to 6, DEFCON 6 at this moment. We're just not there yet. Let's see. Global health experts said it was too early for countries to lower their guard, but there was no imminent plan to raise the pandemic alert level. So in a span of 3 days, you have all these people saying, it's kind of just the flu. It's not so bad. Actually got something to treat it. We're okay. Yet the hysteria in the media is, it's starting to wane. It's starting to wane. But the schools, honestly, dozens and dozens of schools closing in Michigan, at least. I really didn't check that out, if that's a national phenomenon, for like weeks. And they're disinfecting. They're getting the Lysol off. Meanwhile, Detroit is melting. The auto industry, it's not just Detroit. I should not say that anymore because it has impacts across the whole country. And as I said, people, priorities. So I had to make this connection. I was asked to be on, yes, on Fox News Sunday, yesterday. They asked me what my listeners were thinking about. What did they care about? That was the question, one of America's voices. So, well, why don't we just listen to this, because I think you can judge how well I said what it is that you said, what we've been talking about, and did I represent you well before I get into the fight that Rush and I are having. And I told you that this was coming, but you need the backup on this. So here, this was on me. Shannon Breen was the host on this Fox newscast. It wasn't your typical rock'em sock'em robot, but I tried to represent what you thought. Here we go.
We turned to one of America's voices, syndicated radio talk show host Nancy Skinner, to get the pulse of Americans all across the country. Find out what folks are talking about this week. Nancy, thank you so much for joining us.
You bet, Shannon.
All right, where you're coming from, a lot of financial news, folks worried about Chrysler, the auto industry. Tell us what they have to say this week.
Yeah, you know, I'm right here. I'm based in Detroit. It's a national show, though, and it's a national issue. I think everybody, they're really surprised that so much attention was being paid to the swine flu, and we were counting down to this bankruptcy filing with almost not a whole lot of attention on it. Because the repercussions are national, and I think what we're starting to see as they filed immediately, I mean, some suppliers have already shut down. They're afraid they're not going to get paid. So this cascading effect, not only among suppliers, but potentially it's going to hit retail, commercial real estate, dealers, I hate to say it, radio and television stations. The auto manufacturers are as much as a third of all advertising. So the Boston Globe, I heard your story there. I mean, everybody is impacted by this. And so I hope the president is correct. He thinks that they're going to be able to go through this bankruptcy process in a surgical fashion. But, you know, some insiders are worried that literally vultures that held out, these hedge funds, they would rather liquidate Chrysler. That's what they wanted to do, to get, instead of 65 cents on the dollar, the offer was 33 cents. They're going to liquidate Chrysler and risk this cascading effect throughout the entire economy. 1 in 10 jobs. That's what this small group of hedge funds did to this country while we were also obsessed with the swine flu this week, and my listeners were outraged about that.
Yeah, I think we have a bit of a call from one of your listeners on the topic of Chrysler, if we can play that.
Nancy?
Yes.
I'd like to thank you for being on this subject. That's why I'm listening to you. And I really appreciate it. My husband works for a car dealership, Chrysler Jeep. And they've already cut back his hours. But hasn't this been a roller coaster ride? Up and down for months?
Nancy, you're hearing from people who are very personally impacted by this. They've got to want more attention on this.
Absolutely. I mean, and it's not just Detroit. Like, that woman was from Florida. All those dealerships, all the real estate that will happen, the retail that goes around that. We just feel like, my listeners, I think, feel like manufacturing matters. We've got to make things here in America. We can't just all be derivative traders, you know. And this industry is important. They can turn around. And you have this whole battle between the banks, Shannon, and at one point, and the auto companies. The banks were getting TARP funds. They got bails out, and some of those same banks were refusing to cooperate in terms of putting this deal together. So there was a lot of tension concerning that, and let's just hope that this bankruptcy filing, it goes as planned, because it's now let's just say this, Shannon, our national economy is in the hands of Arthur Gonzalez, or Big Pete's. Obviously there's lots more going on with the national economy, but Arthur Gonzalez is now the bankruptcy judge in New York, who's going to have to make these very tough calls on getting this company to survive, because the suppliers are all interconnected. That's what people don't realize, that just even if Chrysler goes down, then all those suppliers, they supply all the big three, and guess what? Toyota and Nissan and all those other companies rely on the same supplier base. So the economic stakes of this case just can't be understated, and all we talk about is every new case of swine flu, you know, in the country, the world.
There certainly are other news stories out there. Nancy Skinner, one of America's Voices, we thank you for your time today.
Thanks.
There you go, me representing your voice at 1-888-64 Nancy. How'd I do, folks? Okay, you can grade me. Have I been on the air 100 days in this new incarnation? I don't even know. I got an email from people that say, why do you go on there? Why do you even do that? That I think you'll like on the other side. If you listen carefully, I knew that this fight was coming. I knew exactly what the next high-stakes game of chicken is going to be. And Rush, my little love nugget, Rush Limbaugh, and I got in a big fight over it on the weekend. It spilled out onto his show already this morning, and so I guess we're going to have to just air it publicly. I don't what it's going to have to be, because he took the first step, so, you know, fair is fair. He's going to show, so do I. 1-888-64 Nancy. That's 646-2629. As we move along on the Nancy Skinner Show. We gotta get a lot in. So let's move along on the Nancy Skinner Show. I'm Nancy Skinner, 1-888-64 Nancy, or 1-888-0-Nancy. Just played an appearance I had on Fox yesterday saying, hello, people, swine flu, like last week. Are you kidding me? Do you really think this hysteria 24/7 on every network is justified, or is it a ratings bonanza? That had people, all the networks, hysterically covering it and causing this panic where schools are being quarantined. And at the same time, issues like this countdown to bankruptcy, which could affect everybody in very material ways, may still yet, was completely not covered. And I got to read this real quick before we move to the phones at 1-888-64-Nancy. Someone wrote in one of these. You know, I talk about changing hearts and minds all the time. This guy says, "Bravo!" His name's Jeffrey. Bravo! I appreciated your synopsis on the bankruptcy of Chrysler on Fox News on Sunday. I've been screaming for a week that the car manufacturing crisis was the most important thing in America when the news was filled with 160 cases of swine flu in the U.S. Not only did you recognize the bankruptcy problem, but you analyzed how it would filter down. I don't think I agree with your politics, but you definitely know what you're talking about. I'd love to listen to you on the air. I live in Greensboro, North Carolina. Is there an affiliate here? Okay, two things. Thank you, Jeffrey Mobley of North Carolina. You probably don't if you're watching Fox News. But friends, this guy agrees. He saw me there, agrees with everything I said, wants to listen to the show. Do you get what I mean about changing hearts and minds? Even when I have to put up with the emails that say I have sweaty hair and I probably just did the janitor before I went on the air, which is most of them. So here's what you need to do. Go to my website to find an affiliate, because you and I know we don't have long together here, right, in KTLK and KPOG. Our big stations with the return of Randy Rhodes. So please go to my website at nancyskinnerlive.com. Sign up, first of all, so you know where I am, because I'm sure as heck not going away. But there's a little thing called find a radio station there, and you just put your zip code in, and you can see it'll help you find the talk station in your area. And if I'm not on that station, you need to send them a letter saying, or an email, a call, and say, have you heard of this Nancy Skinner? Here's the website. Here's the link. When we get more people kind of focusing on what's important, you know, and fighting back against this follow the hysteria of the moment, then we can really have some influence here, folks. So I digress, but I want to make sure in the time that I have with you that you all know to go to nancyskinnerlive.com. And when you send those emails to the stations, trust me, those PDs call me back. They write, they're interested, they want to hear that, especially now. So taking up 5 minutes out of your day to do that could have a huge impact. And I so appreciate your doing that for me, because I'll be there for you. And as we continue, I'll take your calls at 1-888-64-NANCY. But I got to tell you all about how Rush and I had this little fight. And I'm going to I'm busting them on the air, okay? On the Nancy Skinner Show. But often, Nancy's gonna show 1-888-64-NANCY. In particular, I think I called it right last week to say that we were completely hysterical about the swine flu, and that the media was driving this, and we were ignoring this countdown to bankruptcy, which will have far greater influence on people's lives than a runny nose. And come right now, they're back now. It's not so deadly. Right, so I'm going to get into this. Obviously, I saw this coming with Rush Limbaugh. I knew exactly what their arguments would be concerning Chrysler and the hedge funds who pushed us into bankruptcy. Predicted that last week, and lo and behold, we had a brouhaha over the weekend, and it spilled out in the airwaves. We're going to get to that in a second. But Tony is calling because I asked people if this is just in Michigan. They're shutting all these schools down, all of them, for like a week or 2 weeks and disinfecting them because of this hysteria. We have two suspected cases in Michigan. And Tony is giving me the report from California. Hi, Tony.
Hey, how you doing, Nancy?
I'm well, thanks.
Great. Yeah, I live east of L.A., and following the local news here, we've got two schools now that have been shut down. What they've set up as policy in this whole area is that if a kid is suspected, they're going to shut the school down for a week. And so there was a school in Claremont and a school over in Highland that I know of that have both been shut down now because they think the kid had swine flu.
Yeah, okay.
And right. This is just, it's just nutty. It's like, in one of the schools they reopened because they said, oh, it turns out they checked the kid out and no, he didn't really have it.
Yeah, and what are the economic repercussions of that? You know, everyone who's got to come home from work or find a babysitter and all that kind of, and right now it's the worst possible time to do it. So sounds like a couple schools. And
I'm hard hit out here.
Yeah, you're hit. We all are. We all are. Trust me. All right, Tony, thanks a lot. Appreciate the update from California. Sounds like he's got a tap down there. All right, here's the deal. By the way. So I went to, this leads in, and I think this is important. I went to, there's a big NAACP dinner in Detroit every year, like 10,000 people attend. And, I mean, it's a biggie. Jesse Jackson was the keynote speaker, and you know, it's always a big deal. So I'm at the VIP reception with my sister, the judge, hanging out. And who did I end up having the pleasure of having a conversation with? I just gotten off Fox News, went straight from there to this reception where I'm making my, you know, I've become the cheerleader, I suppose, for Detroit, as y'all know. I end up speaking to Fritz Henderson, the new president and CEO, was there. And just introduced myself. We chatted a little bit. I told him that what I'm doing, I am a radio host and nationally and, you know, talking about the fight on TV. And you know what? I'll tell you one thing about him. he had a, obviously he's a big shot surrounded by a bunch of people who wanted him to keep moving. You know, that's all like the keep, you know, we got to go. When I said I was talking to people, talking to you, listeners, I said I talked to people all over the country about this situation. He wanted to know. I mean, he stopped. He was like, shrugging these people off. You know, he wanted to hear what was being said. He wanted to engage. He seemed to me to be, if you met the guy, it was amazing. I walked away going, this is a smart guy. You know, we talked about some of the polls and how people think the way they think. A lot of you have expressed to me this concern that the industry fought CAFE standards for so long and that continues to fester. And he wanted to hear it. He didn't want to dismiss it. He wasn't arrogant. He was down to earth. He's a good leader of this company, General Motors. I'll tell you that. So for folks who are, you know, rethinking, I was amazed that he would take the time to hear. But when I was out, just did this thing on, and he knew exactly what the challenge was. Fritz was nice. This is good. I feel confident. They have a good new leader. And their deadline is June 1st. Okay, folks? So pay attention this time around. All right. So I knew this was coming. This is my honey bunny and I. Love Mr. Love Bucket. He's talking about a prediction he made on his show on Friday.
Let's go back to me on this program on
Isn't it always
Friday,
about you, honey?
I made this prediction. So here's the money question. Did the big banks decide out of the goodness of their hearts to go along with Obama and settle for pennies on the dollar? Or did they do it? There's three possible reasons. They did it out of the goodness of their hearts. They did it because TARP money was sent to them under the table to cover their losses. We'll never know if that's the case. But it's a good bet. Maybe they didn't suffer losses. Maybe the big banks didn't really. Remember, these guys all voted for Obama. Public consumption is everybody took a bath. And that's what makes the deal fair. Everybody sacrificed except the UAW, Obama's real friends. The third possibility to explain why the big banks rolled over is they're just scared to death because the Obama administration Treasury Department has their future in his hands. So, of the three possibilities, goodness of their hearts, they got secret slush money under the table from TARP, or they're scared to death because the Treasury Department holds the future right in their hands, I vote option three. I vote that the big banks rolled over because they're scared to death, because wherever I go, I don't care who I interact with, they're scared to death of this administration.
So he played that today. Okay, that was his prediction on Friday, saying he was right, and this is why he was right.
Beyond a shadow of a doubt, I was right. Option number three, they are scared to death. My buddy Frank Beckman at WJR in Detroit interviewed one of the bankruptcy lawyers for one of the bondholders at Chrysler, one of the clients. His name is Tom Loria. Tom Loria said, let me tell you, it's no fun standing on this side of the fence opposing the President of the United States. In fact, let me just say, people have asked me who I represent. That's a moving target. I can tell you for sure that I represent one less investor today than I represented yesterday. One of my clients was directly threatened by the White House and, in essence, compelled to withdraw its opposition to the Chrysler deal under the threat that the full force of the White House press corps would destroy its reputation if it continued to fight. That's how hard it is to stand on this side of the fence. And Frank Beckman said, was it Perella Weinberg? Loria says it was Perella Weinberg.
Okay, so here's the deal. We've caught him in a red-handed lie. So Frank Beckman, he's referencing his buddy Frank Beckman, who's a host on WJR here in Detroit, which is the big 50,000 watt Citadel station, similar to WLS in Chicago. Right wing, it's all right wing. It's a big Democratic city, all right wing radio, and Frank Beckman was the guy that interviewed this lawyer called Tom Loria, is his name, of White & Case. Now, so this guy is representing one of those hedge funds that held out and essentially forced the government to file, and Chrysler to file bankruptcy, because they had enough votes to do it, and they would not compromise. And so I knew when I saw that deal that this would come down to, and this is going to get bigger. Okay, here's one of the Nancy predictions, folks, like the swine flu and others. They are going to turn this into the test case about the Constitution itself. okay, about free market. The Tea Party people are going to go nuts as this story unfolds. So Tom Luria, let's see. Let's hear what he had to say. I got the interview from Frank Beckman, who's in Detroit. Okay, mind you, probably the revenues from his from the auto companies have enriched this man beyond belief, being from Detroit. And here he is interviewing this lawyer who is claiming that the Obama administration is violating the Constitution of the United States.
They bought a contract that said that they get paid before anybody else does from Chrysler. And they have been told by the government, who is in complete control of Chrysler, oddly enough, that despite their contractual right, they do not get paid before everybody else. So they are standing on their rights, standing on the law, trying to defend, in effect, what is the Constitution of the United States to make sure that they get what they're entitled to for their investors.
Tea baggers, take up your arms in favor of the hedge funds, because here's your cause. Wealthy hedge fund investors who bought discount bonds called junk bonds and who's forcing the manufacturing base into liquidation. That's what they're trying to do. First of all, how many levels, and I've got lots of sound here. First of all, he said that the government controls Chrysler, which it does not. I mean, between this guy Tom Luria and Rush Limbaugh, I got to count the lies. Bother you to like count the number of lies here? Would you like mark this down as I go through here? Okay, number one, the government does not control Chrysler. They are going to convert a loan into equity, okay, and they'll have 8% of Chrysler, so they will not. That's one as we go through this. Let's see what else now.
Why not take a concession that is being asked of everybody else and accepted of everybody else, including other hedge funds that had bought some of these bonds in Chrysler?
Well, that's a great question, because let me tell you, it's no fun standing on this side of the fence opposing the President of the United States. In fact, let me just say, you know, people have asked me who I represent, and that's a moving target. I can tell you for sure that I represent one less investor today than I represented yesterday. One of my clients was directly threatened by the White House and, in essence, compelled to withdraw its opposition to the deal under threat that the full force of the White House press corps would destroy its reputation if it continued to fight. That's how hard it is to stand on this side of the fence.
Was that Perella Weinberg?
That was Perella Weinberg.
All right.
Okay. Despite claims by Perella Weinberg that that's just not true. Okay? So that's two. So do you get this? Because it's a little complicated. I want to make it easy for you. Rush is turning this into a big national story. It's based out of here, he's saying, and he's going to turn it into a big case of the Constitution. This lawyer for Perella Weinberg, former lawyer, have you, okay? Because after it went into Chapter 11 bankruptcy, Perella Weinberg decided that they were going to play along. They would play ball. They have denied that there was a threat. This is the charge that's being leveled. That the White House would use the full force of the White House press corps to threaten them. And that's why they decided to. Now, can you imagine that? First of all, talking about herding cats, I'm going to send Helen Thomas after you? It's a boutique investment firm. We know what that means, don't we? It's where rich people put their money. And what we're going to send, like, Ed Henry? These guys, like, they are the minions of Obama, and that Obama and Gibbs can snap their fingers and say, Perella Weinberg, go after him. And, like, that group, Major Garrett from Fox News, Les Kinsolving, like, they're going to go after a firm, like, they're going to go after, I'm going to sick the entire White House press corps. You. Can you believe, so there was a statement released, Bill Burton, who's the deputy, said, first of all, it's absolutely not true. The only people involved in these conversations were Perella Weinberg and the task force. They're both saying it's absolutely not true, this direct threat. I mean, they would be the ones involved in that conversation, not the lawyer who wasn't there. And so this lawyer is going on, and they left this lawyer. It's not even the guy, but it gets better. It continues, okay? The lies keep coming. So I told him I was so mad about what he said, I was going to bust him on the air, and here we go. And for, you know, for better or worse, as they say, 1-888-64-NANCY. I guarantee this story's going to get bigger because it's going to be about the Constitution. It's going to be like one of those battles. Do we have a rule of law or not? And it's going to grow into a monster case. I'm telling ya, I bet money on it. I deal book it. As we continue on the Nancy Skinner Show. So baby, you to get this, people. I'm gonna do what I do best, condensing. On the Nancy Skinner Show, 1-888-64-NANCY. Rush Bo, all right, is making a big stinking deal about a lawyer with Case and White named Thomas Loria, who formerly represented one of these vulture hedge funds that President Obama said, I do not stand with them, when he made his announcement on Friday or Thursday. Thursday was about the Chapter 11 filing, correct? Now, Perella Weinberg, this is a partner's, has decided to go along with the situation, and apparently some are holding out in bankruptcy court. It's in the hands now of a man named Arthur Gonzalez in New York. So you better believe I was reading up on Arthur Gonzalez. He was the bankruptcy judge in the Enron case. And, you know, seems like a really good guy. Let's just put it that way. An up and up good guy. Great things have been said about this man. Thank goodness. Let's hope. Here's the problem, guys. We're all in uncharted territory. So, so they're all spouting out about their constitutional right. These hedge funds, okay, even the banks, remember we talked about the big banks, they came through. Chase, JP Morgan, Citigroup, and Morgan Stanley. Or Goldman Sachs, I'm sorry. They took the deal, which is, the deal is this on Chrysler, that the U.S. taxpayer, you and I, the government, would convert the loan into equity. The UAW, okay, they were owed $10 billion, and it was not for the UAW, as has been asserted millions of times, and you'll hear more of this as we continue this drama. This is their health care fund. Okay, Viva Fund. And what they did in one of their earlier concessions in 2007, then they said, okay, we'll take it off your books and we'll pay for these obligations. This is people's retirement and health care. So we'll take it and put it off of your liabilities, but you have to guarantee these payments. It's another contract. It was a contract, okay? And we will manage this and try and reduce the costs. And it was one of their big concessions that they gave, instead of the company being responsible for that. So in this so-called arrangement, they decided to take for 50% of that equity. Instead of that $10 billion that they are owed, payments owed, a contract signed to provide these benefits to these retirees, who otherwise it will fall on the government. They said, we'll take equity, 50%. Well, you know, 50% of that, and we'll get some equity out of it. And that is just hope right now. The stock in Chrysler, you know, I mean, effectively saying, we're putting these retirees' life's savings into equity stock. What is that? It's an IOU if we do well. It's a huge concession to give up. Huge. They don't have money to put into the deal. No one has money. the government is the debtor, the dip financer. It's debtor in possession. See, this is none of this is like a regular bankruptcy. In a regular bankruptcy, you go in and you find someone who's going to do your financing, your debtor in possession, your dip financing. Nobody, there is no such thing. It's us. It's you and me. It's the taxpayer. So we have the contract of the UAW. You get this? They're going to give up this contract for all these benefits versus a contract that these hedge funds signed when they bought junk bonds for 30 cents on the dollar, speculating, and now they're going to take this company into liquidation and claim that they have a superior position based on the Constitution of the United States. And now Limbaugh and these guys are going to ratchet this up to a constitutional crisis about the rights of property owners. You getting this? We'll work you through it on the other side as we continue. You need to know this. It's going to be bigger. That's why I'm here. It's my job. Doing my job. Nancy Skinner Show. There's more financial crisis coming down the pipe, too. Thursday, the stress tests will be revealed publicly. So we'll deal with this one, then we'll get to the banks. We'll get back to the banks. Banks are involved in this one. It's the Nancy Skinner Show. I'm Nancy Skinner. 1-888-64-NANCY. That's 1-888-2629. Okay, so if you're just joining the program, I am getting you up to speed here, obviously. Chapter 11 bankruptcy has been filed. Is in the hands of Arthur Gonzalez in New York. And so, therefore, 1 in 10 jobs essentially may ride on art. in some weird ways, art has a bigger job than anyone knew. So Chrysler, you've got this small group of hedge funds that held out to the very end. Now it's turning into a big constitutional battle over their right because they were first lien holders and they're secured. This is the Constitution, and Obama's trying to attack the Constitution. In restructuring a deal. But this presages what is going to happen June 1st when General Motors is going to face a similar situation in some respects, but in a lot of respects, it's all very different. So we're going to just keep moving along and trying to understand this as best we can with the help of some of my friends. Jeff Green is the Detroit Bureau Chief from Bloomberg News. And we thought we'd get an expert here on the program to help put all this stuff into perspective. And Jeff joins us now. Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, such as there are experts on this process.
Yeah, go figure. It's really, you have to dig deep on this because it's taking twists and turns. Jeff, what I was talking about in the last hour was, I knew this was going to come because, you know, I've been out there saying, I was on Fox News, and, you know, bankruptcy is messy. It is not the surgical clean rinse thing. Not so much.
Right.
Once you get into a bankruptcy court and... Essentially, let's start with Chrysler. Tell us do you know anything more about Arthur Gonzalez? Like, what does he like to drink? Can we send him some fine wines? Is he a good guy? He was appointed by Clinton. What's his deal?
Unfortunately, I don't know the history of Mr. Gonzalez, other than he's very experienced in this area, and that's one of the reasons everybody wants to be before him, and that's one of the reasons they chose that court. This is not a court that's any stranger to bankruptcy and it's most likely, you know, 90% likely or more that this will be where the GM bankruptcy is, assuming it's necessary.
Mm. Yeah, he handled the Enron case, and that and I would say that, you know, as big as that was, this is more complicated in this meltdown environment, because you have, what I was just saying here, Jeff, is here's the problem. You have Rush Limbaugh and all these folks, this lawyer, Thomas Laureus, are you following this? The lawyer for Perella Weinberg?
Right.
So he's saying that the administration tried to threaten them with folks like you, that he would sick, I don't know if you're a White House correspondent or who's your White House correspondent over at Bloomberg News?
We have a whole office there with hundreds of them, so they could pick and choose which one they wanted to blame for that.
Yeah, so they would all be sicked on Perella Weinberg, according to this lawyer who no longer works for them. But his case is that, look at these, there are 46, let's start with this, 46 creditors at Chrysler, and they had secured loans. They had first lien, okay? They bought these were discounted bonds, right? Junk bonds. Do you have any idea?
Well, they weren't really junk bonds. They were the debt in Chrysler that had already been secured by the banks and quickly became similar to junk, but they didn't start out, it wasn't the same as an unsecured junk bond. These were bank loans that which were secured, and that is the difference here. We're talking about people who did have an expectation of collateral. These weren't wholly speculative, so there is some.
Well, they were secured, but they were discounted.
Correct. I mean, 60 cents on the dollar was the most they ever sold these for.
60 cents on the dollar?
Yeah, that was the best they ever did was 60 cents on the dollar.
The best, and some of them I understand were bought at 30 cents on the dollar to begin with.
Which is what the government more or less offered. So yeah, I mean, there definitely were a lot of people in the group, the dissident group, that were buying for something that was at least near what the government was offering.
Right. So they would be made whole essentially.
Some of them. It's not.
On where they came in.
Ironically, the people that agreed most with this were the people who were taking the biggest haircut, which were the original secured lenders, the big banks.
Mm-hmm. Well, because they've got stress tests coming out Thursday that are stressful. All right. So what happened was you had this small group of secured lenders who bought these discounted bonds, but they do, as you said, have a secured. They had a lien on them, and they essentially would not. They wanted to be restored. The problem here, Jeff, is that as I was just saying going into break, normally in bankruptcy courts you have debtor in possession financing, this third party. You don't. You have the government coming in to save them. So this is not a usual case where the laws, I mean, this judge is going to have a hard time because the interest, the UAW, let's talk about that part, because a lot of people, they're just saying, well, the UAW is now going to run Chrysler. They took, what they are doing is taking what was promised to them contractually to pay out their health care benefits, 50% of that, and they're just taking it in equity instead of a contractual agreement for those payments.
Right, and they're having to cut the benefits to those retirees that they had earlier agreed to. Even with that, based on that, they're taking away dental and they're taking away optical, and you know, also the bigger headline things like Viagra and Nexium and Prilosec, and those sorts of benefits are going away even with this agreement because they can't afford the level of benefits they had before.
Okay, so major, when you someone's taking your Viagra away, you know, come on, that's pain. That is pain and hardship.
Well, taking away your dental and vision is probably hardship.
I know. I'm a talk radio host, so I have to entertain as well. All right, so listen, so that's the deal there. That they took a huge cut, not only in the, you're right, in the benefits that that they would be offered, but also, you know, this was a contractual promise to that was, they renegotiated that, so that this is equity, okay? So now it's going to go into the hands of a bankruptcy judge who has to decide what prevails. A first lien by a group of, you know, a few investors. Do we even know how many these holdouts are, and who are they? Because Perella Weinberg has now jumped on the board with the administration. So
the ratio runs, it represents about 30%, a little more, of the individual lenders, but only about 10% of the value of the loan. So we're talking 90% of the value of their secured debt is on board with the plan that Chrysler presented to the judge, which, unless the judge decides that the so-called TARP lenders don't have standing, they have an overwhelming amount of the debt in their control at this point and under agreement when they came into bankruptcy. That's why they were confident they could come in, force this on the few remaining holdouts, and move on.
And those holdouts were confident that they could use the principal that they had, the secured loan, to what do they want? Are they, I mean, because their option is this. The company is worth nothing if the government doesn't give them debtor in possession financing. The company is worth nothing. It's liquidated, and then they're in standing in line to auction off a plant in Detroit. Honestly, do they think, you know, they're upside down, the company, their balance sheet, so they're going to have a fire sale right now? I live in Detroit, Jeff. Are you a Detroit person?
Yes.
What's it worth? It's not. Well, it seems like a stupid move.
These are the riskiest of the risk takers, the cowboys of the debt world. They go in sometimes assuming maybe they will lose their principal, but they're going in for the biggest possible return, and par is not the kind of thing their investors are looking for when they give them their money. I'm not characterizing all of them because I obviously don't know the identity of them, but the kinds of investors that are going to fight this are basically looking at it as getting par is not the kind of thing they signed on for, and they're willing to risk losing their principal to take this into the court on the chance they might be able to get more.
Mm-hmm. Now, how do we know? I know we know Perella Weinberg came forward. Now they're on board. We know Oppenheimer Funds was one of the, that was reported in the Wall Street Journal over the weekend, one of this group, right, this non-TARP group.
Right, there's been some companies that have been named, and they today specifically asked that the judge not name any more of them because there's been death threats, and some of these guys are afraid for their safety, so they've been, they've asked for anonymity.
That's crap. That is crap. You know what? I'm sorry, Jeff. You can't be anonymous and have a gag order. You're taking an industry down. You're taking 1 in 10 jobs in this country down so that you go par on a junk bond, and now you want a gag order on the name of your company. You know, that is out of proportion to the reality of any actual concerns over their threat and safety. That's me.
Yeah, I think because of what you described, that's exactly why they're getting the kind of feedback they're getting, is because the idea that this is seen by tens of thousands of people as the end of their industry, and these guys are already part of what's seen as what brought the economy down. I mean, there's not a lot of love for Wall Street right now.
Yeah, well, they don't deserve a gag order in the process. If they're going to go into Chapter 11, then that's, you know, the courts of the courts. Everyone else has to have their name, their documents revealed. And, you know, I'd worry more about the swine flu. All right, so let's when we come back, Jeff Green is the Detroit Bureau Chief with Bloomberg News. We're going to talk about Chrysler because a lot of what's happening here has an effect down the clock is a ticking, and a lot of this shapes sort of what it will, you know, GM's future is like. I talked to Fritz Henderson last night, Jeff, in Detroit. That was pretty interesting. He's a very dynamic person. I feel really good about Fritz. Anyways,
so, he's an interesting guy, that's for sure.
Yeah, so we'll talk about GM and the difference between the two, because these cases are different. As we continue, let's just say that 1-888-64 Nancy. That's the number, 646-2629. The number to the program. If you have questions on any of this, it's complicated. It's going to blow up. It's going to be political, constitutional issues versus really the welfare of our country, the manufacturing base of our country. As I said, it would be. Alrighty, that's coming up. GM next on the Nancy Skinner Show. There was a distance between you and I. Alright, let's move along here. Not a lot of time. Some developments as we continue on the Nancy Skinner Show. 1-888-64 Nancy. So my guest is Jeff Green. He's the Detroit Bureau Chief with Bloomberg News. Jeff, I'm just seeing that the bankruptcy judge, Arthur Gonzalez, has postponed his decision on whether Chrysler can start the process of transferring its assets to this new entity, Fiat, because of opposition from these, what should we call these, non-TARP hedge funds who have drug this thing into it. And guess what, folks? Guess who's the lawyer speaking publicly on this case? Who's representing them in bankruptcy court? It's Tom Loria, the guy we've been covering. He, it says, and this is being reported online, Jeff, that he is imposing, he doesn't want the sale to go through. He doesn't want any assumption of value that this company's going to have value. They're going for liquidation. And he doesn't want the sale to go through because they want to liquidate the assets. Basically, we're opposing at this point everything that the debtor is doing that is premised on the assumption that value would be preserved through the sale. Because if we didn't have the sale, none of these actions make sense, said Loria, who is representing Oppenheimer Funds and Stairway Capital Management is the name. It also says, as you were right, Jeff, people in this group have that they've asked to remain anonymous for now, citing fears for their safety, says Loria, who was all but happy to go on Frank Beckman's show and have it be amplified on Rush Limbaugh's show about how the UAW had done nothing, you know, and taken no haircuts whatsoever, and that the Obama people were threatening them, and now they want anonymity.
Yeah, there's been no shortage of hyperbole around this story, that's for sure.
All right.
And I mean, it is fair to point out that the UAW has taken quite a few cuts prior to this VBA situation coming into this. That was just one piece of billions of dollars in cuts that have been made.
Well, you know, Larry is in Los Angeles. He's a caller, and because his question has to do with what you just said, let's get Larry in here. I think he wants to know. Hi, Larry, first of all.
Hi.
So you're on with Jeff. Your question is, why do you expect the hedge funds and bankers to take a haircut but not the UAW? Is that what you're
right.
saying?
Right. I mean, why not just offer the UAW 30 cents on the dollar that you're going to give the hedge funds and the banks?
Okay. So, Jeff, this is my understanding. If I'm wrong, please correct me. The UAW has taken probably it would be more than that if you had to say that what was owed them contractually for their VIVA fund and for prior concessions and now and the discounts like you mentioned in their health care, they probably got a way more raw deal than the hedge funds.
If you take the obligation, the actual obligation is about 50-some billion dollars, and they're going to get about $10 billion. So, yeah, if you look at it that way, they're definitely getting more than a 30-cent haircut. The problem is they already agreed to a haircut coming into this, which is sort of discounted away. So even before this bankruptcy procedure at Chrysler and the expected bankruptcy procedure at General Motors, they took a haircut that took them down to about 60% of their claim, and now they're being asked to cut that claim in half again. So when you start to do the math, they've already been asked to take a haircut, and they're taking a deeper haircut. Not to say that there aren't benefits that these guys get that most Americans don't get. It's just this is sort of the deal they had been dealt, and these retirees had been expecting as sort of their contract with the company, and it is going to be significantly cut.
Yeah. So did you get that, Larry? They go from $50 billion to $10 billion. So in essence, they are taking a way bigger haircut than these hedge fund owners are, because they bought, most of them bought anywhere from 30 to 60 cents on the dollar, and they were being asked to take, I think I heard 33 cents. So, you know, they would be essentially made whole or take a little bit of a haircut.
Yes, the people who are objecting are the people who are taking the least amount of a hit on this. The people who are going along with it are the ones taking the biggest hit, ironically.
Ironic, and want to be anonymous. Not in my world. Sorry. This is court. You took us into bankruptcy court, my friends, Oppenheimer and Stairway Capital Management and Tom Loria. Nobody wishes ill will upon their personage, but we certainly want you to stand up. If you feel so good about what you are doing and that you're so right, then you shouldn't be out there hiding in this. You should be proud, wearing a flag as you think. Can you tell I'm a little upset, Jeff, right now?
It's leaking through.
We didn't get to GM, so you'll have to come back, will you, and join us on another day here and coming up real soon?
Sure.
Tell us about how this affects GM.
I will.
Okay, Jeff Green is the Detroit Bureau Chief of Bloomberg News. And thank goodness he was here, because Larry, did you see that? Bigger, way bigger haircut. We'll keep going on the Nancy Skinner Show.
This happened on Friday in Detroit. It's made the news throughout the weekend. Now the White House, by the way, is denying all of this. But there's a pattern here, ladies and gentlemen, that sort of gives the lie to the denial. I mean, this is, you know, we've referred to the situation that's going on in Washington as loan sharking, Obama loan sharking people. Basically what happened was, as we mentioned last week, the bondholders, the investors at Chrysler, were leaned on by Obama and called out personally by the name of hedge funds, and they were selfish, and they were holding out for a better deal. These people were forced to settle for 20 to 30 cents on the dollar, while the UAW was made whole in the whole thing. And the lawyer, Thomas Loria, now says that his client, was threatened with reputation ruination from the White House press corps. There's no question that there is fear all over this country of this administration. There's fear in American business. There's fear in average citizens. There's fear in every aspect that does business one way or the other with the United States government.
All righty, there you go. What can I say? Usually we try to keep these little spats of ours contained, but it takes a lot to really get me mad, but he's done it. My little honey bunny. He's done it. So did you hear that? It is the Nancy Skinner Show. I'm Nancy Skinner. 1-888-64-NANCY. News, big news out of Detroit. Yeah, this is going to be big news, and I'm here, so I'm going to talk about it. What he's saying is, if you listen to that carefully, we've caught him in a number of lies. I don't know if Krieg, if you've got your running count, but keep it coming. Keep that Rush Bow lie meter coming. Because one, he said, this lawyer, Tom Loria, he was interviewed on a local big stick here in Detroit, my right-wing host. Imagine that. That these lenders, let's just hear a little bit again. I want to get the words.
Now, this happened on Friday in Detroit. It's made the news throughout the weekend. Now, the White House, by the way, is denying all of this.
Oh, by the way, yeah.
But there's a pattern
and the people
here,
involved, too.
Ladies and gentlemen, that sort of gives the lie to the denial. I mean, this is, you know, we've referred to the situation that's going on in Washington, loan sharking, Obama loan sharking people. Basically, what happened was, as we mentioned last week, the bondholders, the investors at Chrysler were leaned on by Obama and called out personally by the name of hedge funds, and they were selfish, and they were holding out for a better deal. These people were forced to settle for 20 to 30 cents on the dollar, while the UAW was made whole in the whole thing. And the lawyer, Thomas Loria, now says that his client was threatened with reputation ruination.
Now, his client, Perella Weinberg Partners, has released a statement saying, no, we weren't. And they're denying it. The White House is denying it. That they did not. They were. The deal was made, clearly. But here, so we caught him in a couple lines. He said that they were forced to take 20 cents on the dollar while the UAW was made whole. Okay? I want you to get this. They bought these discount bonds for anywhere, because it's a private company, so we don't know, but there are reports anywhere from 30. The most was 60 cents on the dollar. Most reports are 30 cents on the dollar. And they were offered 33 cents on the dollar. So they probably would have come out, this small group of investors, in much better position than anyone else. The banks even, the big banks, they had like $6.4 million, and they ended up with $2 billion in cash. And the UAW, as was just reported by the Bloomberg reporter, essentially went from $50 billion in contracts, mind you. These were contracts as strong as the first loans, secured loans that these investors had. Okay, this is going to be whose contract is bigger. That's what it's going to be. Because now we're in the soup of, this is not your normal bankruptcy, folks. This is the government providing the debtor in possession financing. So it is not your normal bankruptcy. There are national interests at stake. But anyway, so he lied about both those things, about what they were, that the UAW was made whole. They were owed $50 billion. They're going to end up essentially with $10 billion. So they took way bigger haircuts. And not to mention huge losses in jobs, okay, plant closings. These guys were tough. The White House team, in terms of they looked at the balance sheets, the financial statements, and they said real viability. These were always loans, and now they're getting small equity stakes to get this company through. Some, you know, promising news. Fiat is now looking at merging with Opel to be a worldwide company with great advanced technology. So the upside is huge. The upside of this, if we all went through it, if everybody had participated, is huge, because that new advanced technology would help Chrysler get their overseas presence. That would help. The downside, the taxpayers would far more than get their money back, and we wouldn't have this cascading effect. That's the downside. Chrysler goes down, suppliers go down, GM goes down, Ford goes down, maybe 1 in 10 jobs from these hedge funds. So get this. Let's see. So here's another list before, because here's a question. I'll ask you the question first. I'll set that up, I suppose. These guys, these hedge fund people who have taken this to bankruptcy court, and now the judge has delayed any progress on this merger with Fiat because this lawyer, Thomas Laria, who is the lawyer for the hedge funds, who could not come out basically on par, which is even Steven, in this deal because they wanted a better share. Now they want to be anonymous. Now because they're afraid that they could be have death threats or something, which is ridiculous. I mean everybody who's in the public, trust me, we have a certain level of stuff that's just out there. That is the way it is. Should there be a gag order? Should there be a silence? Bankruptcy proceedings are like any other thing. The sunshine laws apply. You've taken this country down this perilous route through bankruptcy court, and they've reported a couple of the names, Oppenheimer Fund and Stairway Capital. Those are being reported. I just got that on CNBC's website. This group, apparently Perella Weinberg Partners, were recalcitrant. Now they are they are on board. Should they be anonymous as they take the country through this? And don't these retirees who also have their health and pension, which could completely fall apart and they get zero, nothing, and they're retired and they can't go back to work, don't those people have a right to know who is taking them to court? Because they have a contract too. They have a contract. They have something that says that you're going to get health care insurance till you die. They have that in writing. So why do these people, why don't they deserve to know who's taking them to court? Do you understand that question? I think they have every right to know who it is who is taking them to court, who is not willing to, in these extraordinary times, just do less, far less than anyone else did. I think they do. 1-888-64-NANCY. So now let's keep going because Rush kept going. And we caught him, and we're gonna have this route. We're gonna have it out.
And President Obama. Now, who is this lawyer, Thomas Laria? Thomas Laria is the head of a bankruptcy group at White and Case, the law firm. He is a Democrat who contributed $10,000 to the Democrat Senatorial Campaign Committee in 2008. So he voted for, he contributed to the very regime that he brought to power that is now wreaking havoc on his clients and threatening them with reputation ruination.
Okay. So once again, keep track, Krieg. He said he's a Democrat lawyer who contributed $10,000 to the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee. This is pulled, I assure you, from the ABC News report on this story entitled White House Denies Charge by Attorney That Administration Threatened to Destroy Investment Firm's Reputation. They talk about Tom Laria, the lawyer representing the hedge funds who insists on pushing this economy to the brink of national disaster. He said, in this report, it says he's a Miami area-based attorney, describes himself as an independent, not a Democrat, Rush said Democrat, and says after waiting in line for 6 hours last November, he ended up not voting in the presidential election. That's pretty interesting. Why would you wait in line for 6 hours? I'm up to 9 lives already, Krieg? Wow. All right, hurry up. He donated $10,000, yes, to the DSCC, okay, in 2008. Here's what little Rushmo forgot. $1,000 to then-Senator Hillary Clinton in 2006, okay? He's maybe not President Obama's biggest fan. He didn't vote. Because you know if people vote, that's all on record, right? You can pull that up. You don't know how they voted, but you know if someone votes. That's all on public information. As they want a gag order on who they are, even going through bankruptcy court. So we got a couple more. Those are two more lies. He's not a Democrat. He calls himself an independent. Did not say he voted. And it doesn't matter to me who he contributed to. He's got his money on the line. Here we go. Keep going.
But because he's a Democrat and gave 10 grand to the Democrat Senatorial Campaign Committee, he's got some credibility here, does he not? He's got a little bit more credibility than the White House spokesman. What did the White House spokesman say? There's no evidence. There's no evidence. What's Loria? Is he lying? That was a lawyer, Russia. But he's also a Democrat lawyer.
What did he say before? There's no evidence. What part of that sentence are you missing? To my friends on the right who listen to me? Big omission there, honey. The charge is completely untrue, said White House Deputy Press Secretary Bill Burton. And he finishes his sentence. And there's obviously no evidence to suggest this happened in any way. Okay? So, for you people who believe that every word to which my sweet pea speaks is the truth, I know better. I just read you the half of the sentence that he read you and just had reporters on to say the whole thing about 20 cents on the dollar while the UAW made whole, completely untrue. Okay, this is the leader of your party. We busted him, what are we up to, 13 times? I got more. Honey, you wanted it. You got it. Not going to be a pleasant night, I assure you. 1-888-64-NANCY, the number to the program. What should these companies get anonymity in their bankruptcy filings? No one has a thought on that. Honestly, anyone could claim. Who else claimed that they're getting death threats recently? I mean, anyone can claim that. It was at the House Financial Services Committee. One of the financials, all these guys were claiming that. They don't want to release the names of, oh, the people that got the bonuses, the AIG bonuses. Yeah, correct. They didn't want that when Barney Frank asked for that information because they were worried about that. I mean, that sounds like the standard play card here. 1-888-64-NANCY. That's 888-646-2629. I know I'm a dog on a bone here. I know I'm a pit bull on an ankle. But I need to be, folks, because this one's going to get bigger. Let me go.
You made a comment to me before we went on the air about the significance of this case as it relates to the Constitution. I'd like you to explain that to my audience.
Well, look, there are kind of two aspects of that. The first is the right to property and the right to contract are kind of sacrosanct in this country. I think everybody understands that when you make a deal, it's supposed to be honored, and if it's not honored, you're supposed to be able to get protection in court. And what is happening here through the force of the United States government, and that's what's disturbing about this. I mean, private parties have contract disputes all the time, but for the United States government to step in, the executive office of the United States government, who under the Constitution is charged with enforcing the laws, to step in and try to, in effect, break the laws, I think we should all be concerned about that. That is a constitutional issue.
Told ya. I think I said this. I think when we were going into bankruptcy, the countdown. I can be mistaken. That I think I said that once it goes into bankruptcy court, you watch. They're going to pull out the secured lenders and its constitution, and even if it has catastrophic economic impact, and there are other contracts like the UAWs, they're going to turn it into this. And the teabaggers are going to be rallying behind the hedge funds that want to be anonymous as they take this country to ruination. I think I said something like that, right? 1-888-NANCY. Here we go. Here we go, folks. The fun has started. This is Tom Loria, who is the lawyer for this group is calling themselves. I'm just trying to think of a good acronym. The Committee of Chrysler Non-TARP Lenders, this is a hedge fund group, the small group that's forcing this whole thing. And I was like, CC not? The cannot group? Is that what they are? The cannot group that wants to remain anonymous.
Now, I asked your listeners, what would they do if they were in our position?
Now, Tom Loria,
you want to chime in on that? What would you do? They're going to get, they bought the stuff from 30 to 60 cents on the dollar. They'd get 33 cents on the dollar and not put plunder the nation through a bankruptcy that could cascade out of control. What would you do? I would do the right thing, but that was not the one I wanted to play for you. Let's see. Here you go.
Turn. Blame it and on I the think president. Everybody in this country should be concerned about the fact that the president of the United States, the executive office, is using its power to try to abrogate that contractual right. If the president will attack that contractual right, what right will it not attack?
There you go. See, you should be afraid. Rush is all over this guy, Tom Laureus, Loria. You should be very afraid because the president is going after your individual freedom. Turns out, obviously, that the company that he used to represent, Perella Weinberg, and the administration are challenging the accuracy of his account, this lawyer at White and Case. And Bill Burton said, and Perella Weinberg issued their own statement saying it's not true. This is what he was saying, that the president threatened to have used the power of the White House press corps, which is ridiculous. You can't order the White House press corps to do anything, to go after them. You just don't have that ability. They go after the president. That's their job. They sit there waiting for these press conferences and asking stupid gotcha questions, okay? They're not going to go after who you tell them to go after, first of all. So that add that, Krieg, to the list. So it's the whole thing is fanciful at best. Bill Burton says the charge is, of course, false, as both parties who would know the facts have pointed out. He told Dealbook, ABC blog Dealbook, who's covering this in detail, should you need further information. It is neither substantiated by the people involved in the conversations nor by what has transpired over the course of the last couple days. Yet, this lawyer will go on WJR in Detroit, and it will be amplified to Rush's 20 million listeners as he goes through and expounds on complete inaccuracies about the nature of this deal, the nature of what, how all this came about, who said what to whom, with the stakes being as high as they are. So, you don't, now you know. I said this is going to turn into a teabagging bonanza. We have a constitutional right. These guys, hedge funds, boutique investment firms, okay, who benefited so richly over this decade and put us on the precipice, are the ones holding out, and they want to be anonymous as they do it. All right, so now you know what's going on with that. When we come back, we're gonna change things up a little bit because I need my temperature brought down a little bit. You think? After seeing this, I want to be a force of light, not just heat. Right? I got to find my zen-like center, which isn't easy to do right now. But I will on the Nancy Skinner Show.
It's like you see right through me and make it easier. Please me, it's a real.
My job, someone has to be. All right, it is Nancy Skinner Show. I am going to move on. Tom Loria, watch out. Honey Buddy, watch out. Rush Limbaugh, we captured him in 13 lies. We're going to move on the show on the Nancy Skinner Show. 1-888-64-NANCY or 1-888-0-NANCY. Hey, folks, I really want you to think about this. In this economy, people losing jobs left and right, and some putting two and two together on good advice column here. You probably don't want to tweet that you have the swine flu right now. Not really a good idea. Or you better think twice about posting your blotto pictures from your graduation bash on your Facebook page. Because employers are looking at that kind of stuff now, and it can hurt you when you do that. You don't believe that that's true? Here's another case from Detroit. The mayor of Detroit, former mayor of Detroit, Kwame Kilpatrick, of course, I don't know how much you heard about this. It was kind of a big deal here because he and his chief of staff were sexting, now known as sexting. There's a word, sexting. 8,000-plus emails to each other. They were having both married, both having an affair, those they were property of the city of Detroit. They were involved in a trial involving the firing of a police officer, and part of those conversations they had admitted to, you know, they had to get rid of this guy, and so it was brought out in the perjury charge. But then 8,000 sex text messages were essentially turned over to the media for all to see. And it was kind of embarrassing. Mayor Kilpatrick is out of a job. That was, he spent some time in jail. He's down in Miami, I believe, looking for a job. Chief of staff is, I think she's out of work. It just didn't work out well all the way around. So that is case in point. But there is an upside to, you can use these tools for good, believe it or not. They're not just, a danger trap waiting to happen. I've been working on them myself, trying to figure out how to make it work for me as I've re-entered the media, from my foray in politics. And so wanted to as I'm tweeting now and Facebooking, you can go to my Facebook, a couple of different pages. My media page is the one you really want to go to, because then you can get, notices on what's happening on the Nancy Skinner Show. So joining me to talk about this is David Knorr. Now, David is an expert in all these new technology like Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. He is what you call a social networking strategist. He came here from Iran 25 years ago with $100 and figured out this new media stuff, wrote The Entrepreneur's Guide to Raising Capital, and the relationshipeconomics.net is his website where he helps people use these tools for good, and he joins us today. Hi, David. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, Nancy. Thanks for having me.
I'm a Johnny come lately, right? If I'm just tweeting now, then I'm already, how late am I in this process?
Listen, better late than never, huh?
So they say. Depends. If it's your wedding, maybe not. Okay, so anyways, tell us a little bit about this. I mean, we've heard a lot of the warnings about don't post anything negative, right? That's
passé.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's stupid.
Absolutely.
Right?
It is social media, social networking is really changing a lot of different landscapes. And the whole job search, career transition is unequivocally one of those. And then just people need to understand what as you've alluded to, what are some of the positive things they can
right.
do to improve
right.
their chances.
Okay. So, I mean, I'm still trying to figure it out. I have I'm in media, I have a radio show, and I do a lot of television. Obviously, that for me is important to let people know when my appearances are, and you kind of build your audience that way, even though some people say, well, that's self-promotion. Yeah. It's like, what, you know, for me, it's obvious that's how hosts, you know, that's how you grow a show.
Sure.
Glenn Beck, I'm seeing, just inked a deal with 3 books, you know, that's our gig. But for your average person, David, who's looking for a job, you're saying you can use these same tools that it's important for everybody to self-promote these days, right?
Absolutely. Just like you have a brand, every individual has a brand. And actually, their name is their biggest brand. So from, you know, saving your name as your Twitter account to getting more proactive on LinkedIn, by far the most prevalent kind of professional social networking site out there, to putting your presentation on SlideShare. These are all examples of personal branding that can be a really strong asset to you in your job search.
Mm-hmm. Because people start to see who you are multiple times, and then the impressions themselves, you know, build almost visibility that is translates into, you know, when you're competing with this many people in this kind of job market, those who are more visible have that, you know, multiple impressions. Just are you going to have a better foot in the door or a bigger foot in the door?
Well, that's exactly right. We've actually estimated about 4 to 5 to 1 of available candidates for the available jobs out there, right? So what's really setting you apart from everybody else that has that resume?
And the besides cup size?
I'm sorry?
Besides cup size?
Yeah. I'm going to take a fifth on that one. So really, you know, proactively elevating yourself above the market noise, whether that's a visual resume, whether it's your Twitter account, whether it's your LinkedIn profile or your Facebook page, all of these things really help you position yourself as hopefully an expert or a resource in a particular job, not just a candidate.
Okay, David Noir is my guest, who's a social networking strategist. David, let's go through a couple of these because, if I'm just on board, I know there are a lot of people who are effectively just learning the internet, believe it or not, learning how to use this in these new tools. What is, like, I'm in LinkedIn, okay? I see occasionally I get LinkedIn messages. How do you use, tell us what LinkedIn is, because that's, as you said, the most professional, and how to effectively use it. What's the best, I sign up and then someone says, can I be in your network? I say yes. But then once you've sort of said yes to those emails, I don't do anything with it. Should I?
Yeah, you really should. LinkedIn is LinkedIn, LinkedIn.com. Again, it's a social networking site for business professionals, and there's an estimated 40 million users on LinkedIn. Nancy, I would say less than 10% of all the users really know how to use the system. First thing you need to do is really build what we call a content-rich profile, right? This is not the place to be shy or humble, right? Go on there and build a profile that holistically describes your background. By the way, specificity drives credibility. Don't tell me you've got a 20-year background in a particular field. Tell me where you've been. Tell me what you've done. You can put your recommendations where others have recommended you. You start inviting your most trusted, again, professional contacts and relationships on there. They've recently launched a series of applications where I can now tie my blog to my LinkedIn profile. I can tie my presentations, again, on SlideShare to my LinkedIn profile.
What's last site you just mentioned?
SlideShare.net is the YouTube of presentations. And let's say you wanted to do you had a presentation on media success. Well, when you put it on SlideShare,
it'd be short, that's for sure. But anyways, go ahead.
you open it up to a much broader audience. And again, the LinkedIn applications allow you to tie that presentation to your profile. So
and
now
that's SlideShare.net.
SlideShare. S-L-I-D-E, SlideShare.net.
SlideShare.net. Okay. And that's like the video of professional resume. So you're creating, what you're doing is creating with all of this an electronic resume that's visual,
Very much so. And it's very viral.
Through these tools. Well, hey, listen, I'm not done with you yet, David. I didn't get my questions in. Can you hang with us?
Sure, I'm happy to.
Great. And if you have questions, David is happy to take them. He is a social networking strategist. His website is relationship economics with an S .net. David Noir, on how to use these. Because a lot of people like me, I think. You signed up with the Twittering. I know that, who's the one senator who's Twittering all the time? But I keep trying to figure out why. Why am I Twittering? I know I'm supposed to, but why? Could I Twitter about Tom Laria, the lawyer that's taking the auto industry into bankruptcy? Since people care. Anyways, we'll help you as you try and navigate this crazy, crazy global economic meltdown. Seems like every day in the Nancy Skinner Show. Even me, come May 11th, I might need some fresh employment skills as things may change for me. So my guest is David Noir. He is the CEO of Noir Group. and he's a social networking strategist. And we're talking about all these new tools to help people actually get a job instead of just waste their time on social networking sites. David, so I'll take myself as an example, and we'll go from there, because I don't, you know, if folks want to call in at 1-888-64-NANCY and you have a specific question, David's happy to answer it. His website is what's your website? Which one do you want them to go to?
RelationshipEconomics.net.
There you go. Okay. So I have a website, obviously, NancySkinnerLive.com. I kept it at that. I'm multimedia. So I have a Facebook page as well. They're not connected, though. I mean, it's not. I have a blog. And, for instance, I was on Fox News yesterday. I do TV a lot, David. And so Now what we're doing is I just did this appearance on Fox about the auto industry. That's a big, important issue to me. So on my blog, you can see what I did yesterday. So I can take that video, put it on YouTube, and there's a link to YouTube. So anyone could go check that out. And I'm Twittering now, and I don't quite understand why I'm Twittering. Tell me, because why should anyone who wants a job Twitter? Sure. Or tweet? Sorry.
Yeah. So Twitter is a microblogging tool. What that means to you and your listeners is really the ability to ping or update others who follow you, think of it as your friends, and it's a very simple idea, 140 characters to tell other people what you're doing. Well, what people have done is they've taken that idea one step further. They're sharing what they're reading and what they're thinking and what they find interesting. And when you add these updates called tweets with some value add, right, with a link to an article, with a link to a presentation, people actually look forward to seeing those from you. Now, honestly, the first 2 weeks, Nancy, I'm on Twitter, I'm like, what a frickin' waste of time. Right? Mm-hmm. Because I don't care what people are doing between the bathroom and the kitchen. And some people actually share that, right? I'm having pizza. Well, good for you. But when they share insightful information, you start to build. And it's all about the success on Twitter is all about who you follow.
Right.
And who follows you?
All right. So I think, Sharon, you need to write my webmaster. If she's listening, needs to write me. I think I'm Nancy Skinner Live to follow me. How do you know how to follow someone? You go to Twitter.com, and
sure,
they search for me, Nancy Skinner, and if someone wanted to follow me? Because I tweet way more important things than what I'm doing, like I'm eating pizza. Here's a good example, David. I was watching, I think it was MSNBC had a special on global warming that was just really fabulous, and I said, I'm watching this special right now. I wonder if John Boehner is watching this, because he said some really goofy things about global warming. And I think, you know, I was hoping, the reason I did that is that that's something everyone needs to watch. And so people who care about what I care about would get that and go, oh, I didn't know that special was on MSNBC. Is that what you're talking about?
Bingo. Because what you shared was A, insightful about a program on global warming, B, a specific name of an individual. So, yes, there's a search button on Twitter. Anybody that searches Nancy Skinner or global warming or this individual, that update that you created will come up. And that's exactly what you want, is you want to create awareness. You want to drive traffic. You want to drive, again, insightful awareness about a particular topic that you care about.
Okay, so we've covered SlideShare, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. What else are we missing?
There's a couple of websites that are very specific and or strategies that would be smart for job search. One is, for example, most people don't know they can create AdWords or put up ads about themselves, about their backgrounds on LinkedIn and Facebook. And it's fairly inexpensive to do that. So that's one strategy.
And what does that mean? Because I've heard AdWords, but I haven't done it.
Sure. So let's say you're an expert in supply chain or you're an expert in merchandising. You literally can create an ad. You know, here's a white paper. Here's a document. Here's a list of tips or best practices on merchandising, and you put that ad on LinkedIn or Facebook, driving that awareness, driving that traffic back to your blog, your website, your resume. And people who have an interest in merchandising expertise, that's another way that they can find you.
Now, how do you do that?
You literally can create an ad and for very inexpensively post that ad up on Facebook or LinkedIn.
And I mean, but who does the ads for you? Is there a website where you do AdWords? Is that a Google thing?
It is. Sure. So Google AdWords allows you to actually, no pun intended, but Google AdWords, the term AdWords, you can actually create these descriptions, if you will, of how people would find you and your expertise.
Okay.
And it allows you to create specific ads, so when somebody searches that term, your ad comes up.
Now, how does this help, like, when you're specifically in looking for a job, when you're trying to get out there for people who are, they have all these, they're now up to speed on all these different things they could do. Do they go to the employers where they think that they, you know, want to work and with this electronic resume of sorts and say, here's my Facebook page, here's follow me on Twitter? Is that the connection point here, David?
That's exactly right. What social networking is really good for is creating conversation, creating dialogue. And instead of a job search, if they focus their efforts on people search. So, yes, have a target list of companies you think you want to work for. Start identifying, ideally, managers in those companies where you can initiate a conversation. And that's what these tools really allow you to do.
And that gives you, in a market like this, a huge edge up.
Very much.
That's the key.
Very much.
Great. Well, David, Nora, we appreciate your help on this. People can go to your website and get more information, I suppose, right? That's the best way to contact you?
Very much.
Okay, great, David. I appreciate your help, and I'm gonna get on board. I'm gonna do more.
Sounds great.
I'm gonna tweet more.
There you go.
David, the social networking extraordinaire specialist. 1-888-64-NANCY, the number to the Nancy Skinner Program.
Now that I'm far away, it doesn't seem to me to be such a thing to have you hanging off my
your meltdown moment. Nancy's gonna. I like that. That's kind of catchy, isn't it? The Global Economic Meltdown Show. Live from the epicenter of the meltdown in the Motor City. Nancy Skinner, 1-888-64-NANCY. Sharon is writing me that you can. There's lots of ways. NancySkinnerLive.com, of course, the website will always be going. And I'm blogging now and posting my stuff and my appearances on. But she said you can search for me on Twitter as Nancy Skinner or Nancy Skinner Live. So you can add me, follow me. I promise you I will not tell you that I had pizza or something stupid because I know Claire McCaskill is a senator, apparently, that Twitters all the time. And why does anyone care about that? But what I will Twitter you on is really, really important things that are happening so that you know. For instance, I'm laughing at this one. This just hit me. I finally found my Zen-like center. Okay, I know I went off on my auto rant for the first couple of hours, but I found my, I said, okay, move on, find my Zen-like center, help people find jobs, that kind of thing. We just did that segment. And then I'm looking at the news today about the stock closings there during the break that they surged, actually with numbers. S&P turns positive for the first, erasing all of the losses of 2009. Big rally on Wall Street today, erasing the losses suffered on the S&P index. Let's see, it's now up 0.4% for 2009. Many investments like mutual funds are doing well on this index. Gains in housing. Gains in housing, financial, and material stocks pushed up the S&P 3.4% today. The Dow is up 4% for the year. Two new economic nuggets, it's an interesting choice of words, bolstered the case that the economy slide could be slowing and helped extend these gains to more than expected to post their second straight monthly gain, blah, blah, blah. All right, here's the funny part of the article. All right, they're saying financials helped lead it. And who do they quote in this story? Jerry Webman, chief economist at Oppenheimer Funds. Kid you not, Oppenheimer Funds, said stocks are rallying because investors aren't fearful that the economy is headed for the abyss. Okay. There's been this fear that every 6 months another shoe drops, and maybe there isn't a shoe in midair right now, according to Mr. Webman, chief economist at Oppenheimer Funds. If you were listening earlier to the program, you would have heard me say that it is, in fact, Oppenheimer and Stairway Capital Management are these recalcitrant hedge funds that are taking Chrysler into bankruptcy court and forcing this issue. There's your shoe, Jerry. You're the chief economist at the firm that is in bankruptcy court right now saying, "Whew, boy, we dodged a bullet on the economy. Things are looking up." We're taking Chrysler into bankruptcy, which is connected via suppliers to every other major, not only U.S. automaker, but all automakers, which is tied to, folks, here's connect the dots, the bouncing balls, okay? It's not just the autos. It's commercial, the dealerships already, 26, even as part of the deal, 2,600 dealerships are going to go down. That's commercial real estate. Commercial real estate is, that bubble has not yet burst, and everybody's crossing their fingers that the stimulus and all these other things will prevent it from bursting, right? Because it's close to bursting. There's been some pretty big losses, but it's not been catastrophic. What else is the auto industry tied to? It's because it's manufacturing. It's not just autos. Making buses or making all kinds of stuff, right? Technology, you wouldn't even believe, just technology that comes out of this region. So they are a third of all revenues to most radio stations, by far the largest, TV and newspapers. Okay? Major industries rely on these revenues, advertising, which has come to like just a dismal stop. Unless your ads are about saving people from, you know, the tax man or whatever, because everybody's in trouble. So here you go. There's an ask a question today on asked of Press Secretary Robert Gibbs about this imminent showdown going on with the Boston Globe and the New York Times. And Gibbs said, "I don't know, honestly, what government can do about newspapers." A reporter asked him what he thought of the fate of newspapers. His reply suggested the White House hadn't thought or been asked specifically about assistance from the newspaper industry. He said, "I don't know what, in all honesty, government can do about the newspaper." So what's going on is the Boston Globe is having problems, big-time financial problems. They are owned by the New York Times. They have been in a dispute with their guild, their union, and turned over to those people in the industry a document that suggested unless they made massive concessions, then they were going to actually just fold the Boston Globe. And that was last night. Was midnight, Sunday, the deadline. And it passed. It came in. Here we go. White House. "We can't save newspapers," is the headline in the Huffington Post right now. That deadline came and went. And the company showed labor negotiators a draft of a 60-day shutdown notice, which is required under federal law, said it would file if concession demands were not met. The guild said it was a bullying tactic, and lo and behold, it looks like the Boston Globe could get folded. I mean, a great, great newspaper. I'll tell you one story about the Boston Globe, because I lived in Boston for a few years. Actually, when I wasn't even in Boston, this was going on. Eugene Robinson, who's a contributor on MSNBC, a Pulitzer Prize-winning contributor, was a Boston Globe reporter at the time and for years. And I remember this. Even though I'm a right-wing plant, oh, I forgot. From the right-wing plant's file, I had done a lot of research about George W. Bush, the candidate, and his record of being AWOL for military service in the Air National Guard, in the Texas Air National Guard. And this information was out there, published. These corporals who had said he wasn't there, he was not there. I would have known if I had someone in my corps named Bush, a son of this, I would have known. So anyways, I couldn't believe that the mainstream media was not covering this issue. This was a presidential candidate. And Mark Carlin of BuzzFlash and Bob Furtick of Democrats.com and I were the first bloggers, believe it or not. We were one of the first people out there. We had a web page on Salon when Salon had their first blog. We started raising a ruckus, like, shouldn't this be covered? And we would call some of these major newspapers, why are you, look, here's his corporal saying this. Well, it was Eugene Robinson at the Boston Globe that wrote this story. I saw him at the convention in Denver, and I talked to him, and I said, you were the only one that had the guts to really write And he was just quoting from people who knew, who said that I would have known, and putting two and two together. And he eventually got the promotion, and so he's now at the Washington Post from the Boston Globe. But it appears as if the Boston Globe may file for bankruptcy, or the New York Times may let them file for bankruptcy, and a major newspaper will go down. We've already had that in... In Detroit, we have two newspapers. They're supposed to be right and left. Anyways, they stopped delivering on a daily basis. You can only get, what, three times a day delivery? So here's the question. We can't save the papers. You can't save every industry. You can't. There's no way. And I think here's the difference between the autos and the newspapers, because some may accuse me of not being of being partial to the auto industry, and I anticipated this because I like reading the newspaper. I like actually physically reading the newspaper. For me, with the coffee and my New York Times, and I get the Wall Street Journal too. I get them both, and I read them all. I read my local papers. I just like it. I do. It concerned me about recycling, but I was assured that they all get recycled. I just think get so much more information as opposed to the self-selection process of going on the internet and getting news that kind of already reinforce what you believe. Let's face it, you have to click on those links. You have to see a story and want to follow that story. Okay? So I know a lot of people just want to hit Twitter torture. And anyone brings up torture, that's it. That's what I want to hear about. It's torture. Prosecutions. Oh, by the way, I saw John Conyers, Congressman Conyers, last night as well. Gave me a big hug and kiss. He's going to come on the show, like, this week or soon. So we'll talk torture. We'll see what he's going to do. He was looking fine and said that he would be loved to come on the show. And I told him that my listeners really do want to hear what the House side is going to do in this ongoing debate. And he is going to come on the show. So we'll give you a heads up on that. But here's the difference between autos and newspapers. Other than the fact that autos help support the advertising revenues, I think that technology is supplanting newspapers in a way that for the government to get involved in trying to have a bailout with the newspapers, it just doesn't make sense because you're working against technological change. That's not true with cars. Cars are never going away. I mean, we should have more mass transportation, but... we don't. And I think that's a big part of the plan, the recovery plan, the stimulus bill, is that we do need mass transportation. Absolutely. I've been a big advocate of high-speed rail for many, many years. But the fact is, cars aren't going to go away anytime soon. The technology, however, we're right on the doorstep of really advancing technology. And so that's the difference between newspapers. I'm saddened to see them go because I think newspapers do a far better job of journalism. That's my concern about it. Then TV media especially, which is shallow. And look at the swine flu thing. Whatever fear, I guess Newsweek magazine has a special cover, I'm going to pick it up, about the swine flu fear in the media. They go for that. Talk radio hosts, it's all about, here's who you need to hate. I suppose today I was guilty of it. I wouldn't think hate, but I was identifying these hedge funds because of what they're doing. I think that's transparency. I don't think you should hate anybody, but that's what talk radio is. And so where is the source that's sort of impartial information about all that's going on? So you can kind of hear both sides of that story, see what the response is. Rush lied. How many times today, Krieg? Did I catch him in like 12 lies? 12, 13? Where am I going? Away for a while. But, that's what's sad, is that I do think that newspapers really are an important part. Maybe there won't be so many. Maybe there will be a couple national newspapers, I guess. But looks like the government is not going to intervene in this. Coming up, I do want to talk about this. We did get some sound from the president today. I already heard this argument. I'll prepare you for what the other argument is on the why we should keep tax havens open. How this is an important issue about your freedom. No, we don't want to crack down on tax embezzlers. Nope. Rush came up with a good idea on why we need to keep those tax havens open so that tax avoidance, important principle in this democracy of ours. Everyone should have the right to dock their money in the Cayman Islands. That's your God-given right. That is what our founding fathers, why they founded this country, is so that you could hide your assets from the government. Come on, teabaggers. Where are you when we need you? They're going after our offshore tax havens. Where's the outrage? 1-888-64-NANCY. During the last 100 days, we have seen an orgy. It would make any local smorgasbord embarrassed if you looked at this spending orgy we've seen in Washington. So it's no surprise that our national debt is now soaring over $11 trillion. Over $11 trillion. As a matter of fact, last Sunday was National Debt Day. April 26th was National Debt Day. And you know what that means? The government spent its wad by April 26th. Every dime government spends after April 26th.
All right. Who else would say something like that but Congressman Michelle Bachmann? An orgy of spending. The government spent its wad, that Michelle Bachmann on Huffington Post, complaining about the debt. It is the Nancy Skinner Show. I am Nancy Skinner, 1-888-64-NANCY. This was another big development today. And this timing of this is so funny. It's so perfect. Because President Obama came out today and announced that he was going to crack down on offshore tax havens.
And that's why today I'm announcing a set of proposals to crack down on illegal overseas tax evasion, close loopholes, and make it more profitable for companies to create jobs here in the United States. For years, we've talked about ending tax breaks for companies that ship jobs overseas and giving tax breaks to companies that create jobs here in America. That's what our budget will finally do. We will stop letting American companies that create jobs overseas take deductions on their expenses when they do not pay any American taxes on their profits. And we will use the savings to give tax cuts to companies that are investing in research and development here at home so that we can jumpstart job creation, foster innovation, and enhance America's competitiveness.
Okay, so how many times did you hear him say that on the campaign? And we'll spend more time on it tomorrow because I know I got off on my auto jag. But constantly he said, I'm going to stop giving companies tax breaks to ship jobs overseas and create incentive for them to keep jobs here. I mean, how many, if you followed this campaign at all, that's what he said constantly. And I was thinking to myself, you know, how are they going to come back at this one? That's really tough. I mean, these companies are evading taxes, and by closing this loophole, we will be saving $200 billion, okay, over 10 years. $200 billion. They shift them. They shift their earnings off to the books of some of these havens and into foreign countries so they don't have to pay taxes on them. How can you really defend that? Especially when you've got Michelle Bachmann and others and the teabaggers so concerned about the national debt that they built up that you would think that they would say, you know what, there's clearly a meeting of the minds here because that will help us bring down this deficit, this orgy that we're so concerned about of spending that we did. It's going to help us bring that down. So that we don't have these huge deficits, so we don't have to worry about selling our dollar, which is in high demand, by the way, because everyone else is in a mess. Yeah, that's not that today. Dollar, Wall Street Journal, dollar demand is strong, but lending lags behind. It's in heavy demand because everyone else is messed up. Anyways, my point, I digress, is I was thinking how, and of course I listened to, and I didn't get the sound because I was too mad at my little lover boy Rush Limbaugh on auto thing, but he talked about a loophole. Well, everything's a loophole. And now he's they're trying to create the defense for tax evasion that brings up the national debt that they're so worried they're protesting at the tea bag party. Like, this is like Twister on crack, okay? You complain about the debt and the deficits and have tea parties. Now you've got to mount the defense as to why we should allow tax evasion at a national scale that ships jobs overseas. This is good. And, you know, he stepped up to the plate, Congresswoman Bachman. This will be interesting tonight. I'll tape the shows and analyze. Who's going to step up to the plate for tax evasion? They will be. And I will be back tomorrow on the Nancy Skinner Show.